Welcome to the Authority Podcast, Plumbing and Mechanical. When talking about the built environment, we would do well to remember, we shape our buildings, and afterwards, our buildings shape us. Therefore, on each episode, we'll discuss the latest trends from iAtmo in plumbing and mechanical safety, sustainability, and resiliency. Join me, your host, Christoph Lohr, and together we'll explore the ways we can make our buildings shape us for the better. And welcome back to the Authority Podcast, Plumbing and Mechanical. On this episode, we're going to talk about, do specific building codes hurt or help FEMA reimbursement? On this episode, we're going to discuss Bridgewater, New Jersey, situated on a floodplain of the Raritan River, has experienced devastating floods for decades, from Hurricane Dora in 1971 to Hurricane Ida 50 years later. According to riskfactor.com, 70% of all properties in the municipality have greater than a 25% chance of being severely affected by flooding over the next 30 years. Stephen Rodzinak, Director of Code Enforcement for the Borough of Bound Brook, New Jersey, talks to us about the intersection of building codes and the impact on Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, funding to answer the question, do specific building codes hurt or help FEMA reimbursement? Steve, welcome to the Authority Podcast. We're glad to have you.
Nice to be here.
So in our first question, you know, you were at the time in Bridgewater, now you're with Bound Brook, but both Bound Brook and Bridgewater has experienced terrible flooding over the years, and all of us at iAtmo extend our sincere concern to you and your constituents. Tell us about your situation and how, in that area, you all have kind of worked to build resiliency.
Well, the first part of that is to deal with your you're dealing with FEMA, you're dealing with the floodplain administrator for your municipality and floodplain manager. To make sure that you have the latest FEMA flood maps so that any new construction that's going on meets the minimum flood elevation requirements plus the 1 foot of freeboard, basically 1 foot above whatever the flood elevation is. That's the first part, and you adopt the flood mitigation measures that the state recommends. On the municipal level, you adopt ordinances that preclude you from building any type of construction in floodways or other areas that are notoriously known to flood. The second part of that is, and it's really good in the state of New Jersey, is we have adopted state codes. They're not municipal codes. They're not adopted by town to town. It's a state code. We have the ICC codes, the National Standard Plumbing Code in New Jersey, and those address, and I joke about this when I teach classes, is that our codes are a history book of everything that's ever gone wrong. So you have a flood, now everybody says, hey, we have an issue here, we need to address it, and they address it through the codes, creating... if you are in a known flood area, elevation, structural restructuring the foundation of your house to withstand the hydraulic pressure of the water as it enters, floodways in your house that will let water push open a opening and go through instead of putting all that pressure on the outside foundation wall. The codes are very important. FEMA looks at the codes. There was a comment that it has to be a nationally recognized code. Yes. But any code that's adopted in your state that is recognized by your state is something that FEMA is looking for, especially when it comes time to apply for federal and state aid. That's really the key, because quite honestly, dealing with FEMA is not the easiest thing to do.
Yeah. Well, I definitely want to touch on that here in a minute, but let me ask the first quick question, just kind of based on what you were saying. Once you got past the acute crisis of flooding in your area and needed to start rebuilding, was there any kind of compliance with plumbing and mechanical codes specifically, let's say, that played an important role in securing FEMA reimbursement for disaster-related damages, or was that not as much, other than the national recognized?
not as much, but what happens with FEMA is that, and in flood insurance, the NFIP, all those agencies that regulate the flood insurance, once you start to rebuild and you have been in a flood area, they want all your mechanicals and utilities relocated above the flood elevation to protect them.
Okay.
That's really the key. I actually have firsthand experience with FEMA. I lived in Manville, and I lived through two floods in Manville. I no longer live there. First one, obviously, it was just the flooding of the first floor. The second one, I lost the foundation of my house.
Oh, wow.
And then I had to apply to FEMA to see if I could get any type of aid to help rebuild.
So when you apply to FEMA, what type of documentation do FEMA require? I guess for the municipality too, is there any kind of engineered analysis that's needed when applying to FEMA?
So one of the things that they look for is a flood elevation study for your property. But the bigger part of that is FEMA is looking for, especially when it comes to home elevation, because there is a grant for that. They're looking for documentation from the municipality of substantially and repetitively damaged structures due to flooding. That's a big key for being able to obtain any kind of grant or federal FEMA money.
Interesting.
So that's the municipality. So in Bridgewater and Boundbrook, it's happened here also. I was out with FEMA for 3 weeks straight going to houses, and they were dropping off applications to the impacted residents. The application for FEMA, and then there was an appeal application. Because in Irene, it was a tropical storm. FEMA doesn't cover tropical storms. So they were going to get denied, but then they have to appeal. So it's a complicated process sometimes.
That's really helpful. And with it being a complicated process then, can you shed a little bit of light on timelines? In other words, from the time you submitted to FEMA, how long did it take to actually receive funds from FEMA in these cases?
Sometimes months. And that's the shortest time period I heard is months. I've heard people that have gone almost as much as a year to get any type of federal funding. And for me, when I applied, I was denied because I can obtain money through a private lending institution because I have the financial capability of doing that. So the FEMA money is really for the people who don't have the financial wherewithal to be able to go other avenues is what we've experienced at least. I'm part of the LEPC Local Emergency Planning Committee. So the flood happens. We go out and we start looking at all the houses and evaluate it. As a construction official, I'm determining whether a house is unsafe. We post them if required. We also work with the Red Cross and other agencies to find alternate locations for these people temporarily until they can get a hold of their insurance companies or the FEMA comes in and offers money and locations for them to relocate temporarily at least. They are good at that. FEMA set up a command center in one of the other municipalities that wasn't affected for everyone to go to start their application process. It was done right away. It's after you file the application process, things tend to slow down. It's the federal government and things do not run quickly. But they are there and they do show up and all the other emergency outside agencies show up. The big key for rebuilding is really new modern building codes that address these issues. You look at foundation walls, you're building in an area that's prone to flooding and you're allowed to rebuild your home. You want to make sure that you follow the codes because now you have rebar that's required every so many feet in the wall for unstable backfill is what they call it. But in this case, you're trying to protect against hydraulic pressure collapsing the wall. So the building codes address a lot of that.
Go ahead, Steve. Go ahead, Steve.
No, the idea is that it addresses it. It gives you a robust foundation, something that's going to be more stable, more structurally sound, and hopefully prevent the major catastrophic events like I did with a failed foundation wall.
That makes sense. So really a lot of this is, it seems like there's a system in place. I mean, it's not the fastest moving. Anytime you have a large organization, things move slow. Obviously the federal government, and it's a very large organization in that sense. But, other than slow moving, I mean, has there, Boundbrook or Bridgewater, any of the other ones that you've been at, have any of the municipalities been denied funding by FEMA?
Well, there's two different issues that are on. You're talking about residential applicants, and you're talking about the municipalities seeking funding to help build and make their infrastructure more robust.
Okay.
And so I already touched base on that it is a complicated process for homeowners. Let's be realistic. It's no different than code enforcement. The first time somebody gets a permit for a water heater is the first time they've ever had experience. They just had a flood. Everything, they're emotional. Things are bad. They're going. The people there take, I will say this, the people that were processing the applications took the time to and they realized that these people are emotional and they lost all their personal belongings. And they took the time to explain the process to them thoroughly so they understood it, so they weren't frustrated before they left. The municipalities, they tend to get faster action than the residential. It's not as complicated a process for them. It is still a process. But in most cases, the municipality is not really looking for money. They're looking for help for their residents is what they're really trying to do. Because what's their first job? What's the first job of the municipal government is to protect their residents. And that's where their focus is to try to get help as much as possible. Call senators, assemblymen, anything it takes to get the right people there. During Manville's floods, Bridgewater, even Bound Brook, the National Guard was sent out right away, making sure that there wasn't looting or anything else going on. So the federal government does respond. It's on the back end where it starts to slow down a little bit.
Yeah. And really what I'm hearing from you is, the considerations are not so much building codes. Again, you kind of mentioned at the start, it's mostly the, it's a recognized building code of some kind, plumbing, mechanical, building, fire, whatever, electrical. It's more about, are you located in a floodplain? That's where the some of the challenges can come in. And that's something that's obviously outside of building code enforcement per se.
A lot of that gets addressed with municipal ordinances. I was in Bridgewater. I was the floodplain administrator and manager for a period of time. That's a job really for engineers. The engineers and floodplain guys, they talk a different language than construction guys. So it's a little bit more complicated for a layman like myself. An engineer understands everything. Freeboard, who would ever thought, what is freeboard? Freeboard is the distance above the floodplain, the flood elevation. So those are terminology that you would not expect, right?
Yeah.
You think somebody's talking about a skateboarder or something, but it's actually dictating how high above that flood elevation you have to build. But the building codes address the issues that arise from high water if you're in that area. And I know in Manville, they actually built some houses in a flood area, not too far from where I used to live. But they had to raise the first floor living area above that flood elevation. That's determined by FEMA. In Bound Brook, we have a levee system that was installed to alleviate some of the flooding here in town. It was built by the Army Corps of Engineers. was actually given over to the DEP for maintenance and repair. So it lowered the flood elevation in this area. Mm. It's I believe it's 29 feet in this area right now.
Gotcha.
It was 39, which would have made any type of development impossible to do, because you need an evacuation route, and at 39 you wouldn't have that evacuation route.
Gotcha. Excellent. Second to last question. Has your experience in Bound Brook changed the way that you think about new homes and buildings, how they're built and renovated?
That's actually a pretty good question. The codes really have addressed a lot of these issues. So I think more about the location of the houses than I do about the construction, because the construction is addressed in the codes. We adopt codes every 3 years here. It's a 3 year code adoption cycle in New Jersey. We've just adopted the 21 codes. So we're going to the 24s, in 25, I believe is the next. Yeah. It should be the next cycle. Yeah. I'm just trying to remember the dates. It's tough. There's so many different dates out there. And they're having code hearings specifically about a lot of the issues that you're talking about with the flooding and other storm damage. Sandy in Bridgewater was tree strikes. Lost 60-some houses in Bridgewater from tree strikes. They crushed them. It wasn't a flooding issue, even though there was flooding. The bigger issue was trees. Now, you can't really address that, but the idea is the structural bones of the home are being addressed. They're being made more robust so that these type of things are better protected than they were.
Excellent. And my last question, Steve, for you, if you were going to summarize your talk in one word, and one word only, what would be the word you would choose to summarize this conversation?
Hopeful.
Okay. And why would you pick that? What makes you pick the word hopeful?
Because I'm looking at the codes and the ordinances that are being adopted, and hope it eliminates other people from going through the problems that the people in the past have gone through.
Excellent. Steve, really appreciate you taking time out of your schedule. I learned a lot from you here today, and just want to say on behalf of IATMO and the Authority Podcast, thank you so much for being a guest.
Not a problem, sir. You have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks for joining us on this week's episode of the Authority Podcast, Plumbing and Mechanical. Love this episode of the podcast? Head over to iTunes to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. Please follow us on Twitter at AuthorityPM, on Instagram at The Authority Podcast, or email us at iatmo@iatmo.org. Join us next time for another episode of the Authority Podcast, Plumbing and Mechanical. In the meantime, let's work together to make our buildings more resilient and shape us for the better.